Aboriginal people living in remote communities are pretty resilient living in a hot and difficult climate. But current projections indicate that even they could become climate refugees as the number of consistently hot days increase. Professor Tess Lee and a team of researchers from the Australian Housing and Urban Research Institute have just released a report on the consequences of increased temperatures for remote and regional communities throughout Australia.
We asked a simple question, which is, if the housing is a primary form of shelter, as COVID-19 has pointed out it is, how well will it stand up to temperature rise, given that increased heat is one of the absolute predicted outcomes of global warming for Australia? So to find that out, we came up with two prototypes. One, a standard three-bedroom house, as you might find as legacy stock most of regional and remote Australia. And two, that same three-bedroom standard house, modified with improvements as recommended under the National Construction Code and other energy recommendations. And then we subjected them to hollow simulations. How does that house perform with four people in the house, seven people in the house, 11 or 16? How does it perform if you can open the windows to ventilate it or they're jammed shut? How does it perform if you've got air conditioning, more than one air conditioning, no air conditioning? Putting all of those things into combination, 16 people, one air conditioner, et cetera, et cetera. So 366 simulations later, what it showed us was that if you modified the current housing stock, took that standard three-bedroom house and put on eaves and put in insulation, did the extra bits that are recommended currently, it doesn't actually offer thermal comfort across the three bands that we tested it for. That's tropical, arid, and hot mild. Hot mild is pretty much our regional areas.
When we look at a lot of these houses, they look a lot like suburban houses just transported out to the outback. Is part of the problem we haven't really looked at the special needs of these areas and the special needs of societies such as remote communities, where perhaps the way that they live their lives is different to the way suburban lives are led?
So both of those things prevail. There's been here and there examples of attempts to create that tailored design response to different configurations. But the other part of your question, I think, actually goes to the heart of a much more widespread issue. So really, with the advent of electricity and then more or less affordable air conditioning, the imperative to actually design for places was removed. So you pretty much find the same house not just being mobilised from metropolitan Australia to regional and remote Australia. You find that same house in the middle of the USA. You find it all over the world, replacing what once upon a time were much more vernacular architectures that were designed around spaces and places.
Yeah, I mean, you think of houses like Queenslanders, which are designed to catch every little breath of air in very humid and hot regions. And you think, well, you know, there was something that was designed for that particular climate in a much earlier time, admittedly. But we seem to have lost the idea of building something that works in a particular region, don't we?
Again, I think you're naming the heart of the issue. So those Queenslanders and things like that were designed back in the day when the government actually sponsored that kind of research and development, and where government architects actually, you know, poured over the plans and the experiments, if you like, the structural experiments to create structures that were responsive to the places that they were located in. So, yes, the Queenslander is a really excellent example of some very early planning and policy that supported that kind of research and development. And then that became something that could be replicated because the plans became something that others could repeat. Now we have much more generic housing types being transported left, right and centre. Transplanted is probably the better word. And that is one of the key issues that we're looking at here, the legacy effects of that are twofold. One is, right now we don't have housing that is actually in relationship to place. But number two, it also isn't configured to provide thermal comfort with the most optimistic of the climate change scenarios, which we tested for, which is at 1.5 degrees of warming.
You've tested with 16 people in a house. Now, I'm presuming this is like a three-bedroom house, which kind of assumes a nuclear family with, you know, two to possibly four kids. This obviously isn't a house designed for 16 people.
No. So, but as you know, 16 is already too many, and anything above this is just an exacerbation of too many. But 16, unfortunately, isn't
that unexpected. Unusual.
Yeah, it's not that unusual. So crowding remains a major factor. And so we really stress that no matter the design, the need to also alleviate crowding is absolutely imperative. You can't, you cannot expect that a three-bedroom house of any kind is going to be able to accommodate that many people comfortably and well and have people living with dignity and ease, particularly as people age and particularly even if you've got younger people that you're trying to keep healthy and well inside that house, all sorts of reasons why crowding does need to be in adjacently dealt with.
Professor Tess Lee from the Faculty of Arts and Social Sciences at the University of Sydney speaking with me there.